The second birth was obviously wildly different from my first. Both are so special and beautiful in their own ways. Even though I had that birth trauma with my first birth, this was a very redemptive VBAC and birth experience for me. It was everything I could have hoped for. Welcome to the podcast where we get into the real and raw of pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. My name is Hannah Gill. I'm a VBAC mom, doula, and birth educator, and I help women discover their options and harness their inner power to have the experiences they desire. I'm here to support you through the ebbs and flows of these transformative years so we can have open and honest conversations about the hard, the messy, and the beautiful parts of motherhood. This is the Ebb and Flow Birth Show. Welcome back to the Ebb and Flow Birth Show. My name is Hannah Gill, and this is episode number 5. Today's episode is going to be about my VBAC, pregnancy, and birth with my sweet little girl, Marley May, and it's a long one, so let's just get right into it. In between having my son and getting pregnant again, I had to do a lot of physical and mental healing because of the C-section and then the birth trauma that I experienced. I ended up going to therapy about 6 months postpartum to really process my birth trauma and to help with my postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, and postpartum rage. I got hit with all three of those. So I didn't really acknowledge that there was an issue until about, like I said, 6 months postpartum. And that's when I really felt that I needed to find someone to help. As far as physical healing, I went to pelvic floor physical therapy, and I didn't know this was a thing prior to having kids, and I feel like it's something that everyone should just know about because it's so beneficial, and I will now yell it from the rooftops that pelvic floor physical therapy is amazing and everyone needs to do it. It doesn't matter if you've had a C-section or a vaginal birth or if you've never even had children. If you have any sort of pelvic floor dysfunction, like urine leaking when you cough, sneeze, or run, or pain during sex, hip and back pain, diastasis recti, you need to get yourself to a physical floor therapist. It will be extremely beneficial. All of those symptoms are very common, but they are not normal to be experiencing. So I will say it a million times, please go see a pelvic floor therapist. Once we decided to start trying for a second baby, I really started to explore some different birth options. And at first, I wanted to give birth at a birth center, an out-of-hospital birth center specifically. But in Indiana, it is illegal to have a VBAC in a freestanding birth center. But you can have a VBAC at a hospital or at home. It makes no sense to me why you cannot have a VBAC in a birth center if you can do so at home, but whatever. The laws are the laws. So at that point, I thought, okay, if birth center is not an option, let's explore home birth as an option. But as I started researching, unfortunately, I couldn't find a midwife within 2 hours of driving distance that would either take on a VBAC without a history of vaginal birth. So if you had never had a vaginal birth prior to your C-section or had never had a VBAC before, they wouldn't take me on. Or one that would service my area because they were out of service range. And I personally didn't really feel comfortable with having a midwife any further away than that 2 hour time frame, just because I didn't want to drive back and forth to appointments or risk her missing the birth. So I just opted to stick with the hospital. And I know that opting for a hospital birth after experiencing birth trauma in a hospital is not right for everyone. But for me, I still felt fine with that option. Even though it was the last option I wanted, I still felt okay with it given the circumstances of the birth center and home birth options. So I interviewed multiple providers, but I ended up staying with the OBGYN I was with for my first pregnancy and birth. She was absolutely amazing. I love her, and I never had a doubt or hesitation about having a VBAC with her. She was extremely supportive. And I felt very comfortable and confident in my decision to stay with her. I did, however, just go ahead and interview another OBGYN that was comfortable supporting vaginal breech birth in the event that my baby was breech, because I didn't want to have another C-section just due to breech presentation. And my OBGYN that I went with would not support a vaginal breech birth, which is common case now for the majority of OBGYNs because the lack of teaching routine breech births in medical school and residency. But there are some old school OBGYNs that have hands-on experience with breech and feel comfortable doing so, but a lot of OBGYNs do not due to legalities and liabilities and lack of thorough training. So I did have a backup option if my baby ended up being breech and I felt comfortable with that option. I knew going into my second pregnancy that I was going to do multiple things differently. I was really going to work much more on my mindset because the first time around, I wanted to go unmedicated, and then that went out the door because I was not mentally prepared for that option. And then I also decided to see a chiropractor and go to pelvic floor physical therapy just to get my body physically ready for birth again. And then I also knew that 100% I wanted a birth doula. So we started interviewing doulas before I was even pregnant again, because the doulas in my area, they actually book up pretty quickly. And I wanted to make sure I found the perfect fit. And I did end up finding an amazing doula. Her name was Julie, and she completely changed my birth experience. And I still talk to her to this day. I knew going into the second birth that my best chances at having a VBAC were if I went as low intervention as possible. And since I had planned an unmedicated birth the first time around, I just assumed, okay, since I want low intervention, I'm going to plan unmedicated the second time around as well. And because of that, I chose to take a hypnobirthing course called HypnoBabies to help prepare me for the unmedicated birth process way better than I was prepared the first time, because I knew that it was going to be the mental struggle for me ongoing unmedicated versus the physical. I already knew that the courses offered through the hospital did not help prepare me, so I chose to take a course to prepare that was not affiliated with the hospital. Like I said, birth truly to me is much more of a mental feat than a physical one. Like, your mind will definitely give up way before your body does. So I knew I had to put in the work for my mindset and learn how to relax, like to relax my body and just really get into that mental zone to be able to have an unmedicated birth. And now that I've gone through it, I swear by HypnoBabies, and I recommend it to everyone I talk to that wants to go unmedicated. And if you do have any questions about the course or anything, you can reach out to me or DM me. You can also go to, if you want to find out more like details about the course, you can go to ebbandflowbirthco.com/hypnobabies. My second pregnancy for me was, it was much different than my first, but it was still difficult in its own ways. So the first trimester, I was so sick that I had to take a lot of time off work. And I actually ended up needing to go to the hospital at one point for fluids because I was so dehydrated. And then later in my pregnancy, I also had the stomach flu, COVID, and I got in a fender bender and ended up having to go to triage to be monitored. And I had a horrible upper respiratory and sinus infection at the end of my pregnancy as well, like during birth. And then I was also taking care of a toddler, which in and of itself is exhausting on top of all that. So it was just a very interesting pregnancy, but thankfully, my morning sickness, like with my first, did not last the whole 9 months. It was just a very, very brutal first trimester. And again, I was diagnosed with gestational thrombocytopenia, which is low blood platelet levels. And if you have it during one pregnancy, you're more likely to have it in any subsequent pregnancies as well. And then in the first part of my pregnancy, I also had a partial placenta previa. That is where the placenta is either fully or partially covering the opening of the cervix. And a placenta previa at term, so at full term, is considered a medically necessary reason to go straight to a C-section versus having a vaginal birth. And that's due to the risk of hemorrhage, placental detachment, as well as obviously if the cervix is covered, the baby cannot engage and pass through. I also had a marginal cord insertion, which is where the umbilical cord is attached off a bit to the side of the placenta instead of in the center of the placenta. And this can be related to the placenta previa as well. And usually the main concern of this type of umbilical cord attachment is restricted blood flow, restriction of nutrients, and then also oxygen flow to the baby. So because of this, there were just some like additional ultrasounds that needed to be done to make sure baby was growing and not below like the 10th percentile, I believe, is where there would be like cause for concern. And then they also check like the blood flow from the placenta to the baby to make sure everything is going well there. And then to add on to everything, early in my second trimester, I also found out that my daughter was breech. Of course, it's like everything that could happen did happen. And I did a few things to help flip her, including spinning baby techniques, chiropractic care, and acupuncture. And she did end up flipping and staying head down, thankfully. But that was a couple weeks of just extra stress. At the end of pregnancy, I also found out that I was Group B strep positive. And even though I wanted a low intervention birth, I did weigh the risks and benefits, and I personally chose to plan to get the antibiotics while in labor. I know that that's not for everyone, but after looking at all the research, I chose to get the antibiotics. With my first pregnancy, I went into labor at 39 plus one, and that was the day after I had a membrane sweep and just a few days before my scheduled induction. But personally, this time around, because I wanted low intervention, I did not want to be induced for various reasons. So after having discussions with my OBGYN, I felt comfortable going up until about 42 weeks before scheduling an induction. And then I also chose not to get any cervical checks or any membrane sweeps this time around due to the potential risk of my water breaking early, as well as the fact that I just, after all the mental preparation, I completely trusted my body and my baby to start labor when they were ready. So I did not do like the 38 and 39 week cervical checks to see how dilated or effaced I was, because honestly, like those measurements when you're not in labor really don't matter, because you could be 3 centimeters and 100% effaced for 3 weeks, or you can be that for a day. Your cervix isn't a crystal ball. So I just knew that those measurements were not necessary for to know when I was going to go into labor. And I will note that one really big, I don't know if it's a roadblock or a holdup for women wanting to go for a VBAC. One of the main things that's discussed by their provider or by their friends and family is the risk of uterine rupture. But for me, this was just never a concern. I must be one of the odd ones out that just didn't really consider that to be a risk for me. I knew, obviously, it happens. When it does happen, it can be very dangerous, but not always. There could be uterine ruptures that are not dangerous, that don't have bad outcomes for mother or baby, but the risks are so low. And I know it's still a chance that it happens, but to me, I just felt like, okay, there's like a 98% chance that, or like a 99% chance, depending on what statistic you're looking at, that my uterus won't rupture. Okay, great. Like, I'll take those odds. So I just never really was concerned about it. I was mentally and physically prepared for if there was a rupture, then we'll take it from there. I mean, that's obviously an emergency and it needs to be addressed, but to me, it just wasn't a big fear or holdup throughout my pregnancy and birth. I know it is for a lot of women, but I just wanted to mention that for me, it personally was not. So I was pregnant longer the second pregnancy, but not by much. So the whole your second babies come sooner and faster is not always true. But of course, this time I did not have any interventions prior to labor to help induce labor. But at 40 weeks and 2 days, which was on May 20th, right around 4:30 a.m., I woke up to go to the bathroom and I was having some pretty heavy period-like bleeding. And I called the doctor on call and it happened to be my OB and she recommended coming in for monitoring. And I also texted my doula to let her know what was going on. And it was just way more bleeding than I was comfortable with. So I did choose to go in. But at this time, I was not feeling any sort of waves or other signs of impending birth. So I didn't assume that I was in labor. I just assumed I was bleeding and that there was some sort of issue. We got to the hospital around 5:45 a.m. and we checked into triage to be monitored. Since I had not had any cervical checks during my pregnancy, I didn't know if I was effaced or dilated at this point. So I had the nurse check me and they obviously checked for like where the bleeding was coming from. And I was 3 centimeters dilated and about 90% effaced. And we stayed to be monitored for a few hours to see if there was something specific that was causing the bleeding, because they were concerned about a potential placental abruption, which is more likely if you've had a previous C-section due to the scarring on the uterus. And it can be more likely with a low-lying placenta, like placenta previa as well, like I had. But I was still not feeling any obvious waves. I just had cramps and an upset stomach. And the bleeding did eventually just trickle off. So I had planned to go home and labor at home if I started feeling contractions. But I started to feel contractions low in my pelvis. And there was not a consistent pattern. They were lasting anywhere from 30 seconds to 1 minute. So I just assumed it was early labor. Around 8 a.m., my OB had did another check. So this was about an hour later. And I was about 4 centimeters dilated and 90% effaced. And we decided to stay and be admitted because of how quickly I was dilating. Unfortunately, my OB had just finished up a 24-hour on-call shift. So we had to switch to another OB that I had never met before. Spoiler alert, she was freaking amazing. So there was no concerns there. Originally, I had wanted to stay home as long as possible to labor. But like I said, since I had progressed so quickly, we decided to go ahead and stay at the hospital. And the nurse we had, Morgan, was actually the same nurse who was with us for the first part of my son's birth, and she was absolutely wonderful. We got settled in the birth room around 9:15 a.m., and since I was group B strep positive, we started my first round of antibiotics. And at that point, my waves became more intense, and they started to move up higher into my abdomen. And I could still talk and walk through them, but they were very noticeable. Right around 10 a.m. is when my antibiotics finished up, and I chose to have my IV disconnected. I did not want to be connected to that. I wanted to be up and moving, and I had wireless monitors placed. That way I could move around as I wanted to. And there was the new OB on at this time, so she came just to check that baby was head down so I could just go ahead and start walking around. And as soon as I got up and moving, my waves immediately got stronger. And I texted our doula, Julie, to let her know that she would probably need to start heading to the hospital because things were getting more intense where I had to actually focus through each wave. Right around 10:45 a.m., my water broke. And at this point, I was about 5 centimeters dilated. And I tried listening to my hypnobaby's tracks while I was laying down on the bed. And I had a peanut ball between my legs, but I was just really bothered by having my headphones on like my ears, and the peanut ball was extremely uncomfortable. And I should have probably started listening to my tracks earlier, but I didn't realize how far I was already in labor and my waves weren't bad prior to that. So I didn't feel the need to listen to them. But even though I didn't listen to my tracks, I still used what I had learned through hypnobabies throughout pregnancy to stay relaxed and calm and to get through each wave and to keep my body just limp and relaxed. And right around this time, I started to feel like I had to go to the bathroom. So I moved to the toilet because like I said, I was able to move around because I had no IV and wireless monitors as well. And sitting on the toilet was such an amazing and comfortable position for me, which is common for a lot of women. That's one of the reasons the toilet is called the dilation station, because it really allows the pelvis to open so that baby can engage on the cervix. From around 11 a.m. on, I no longer kept track of time because everything just happened very quickly. My waves started to pick up in intensity and frequency, and I had to moan and groan through each one and sway on the toilet while Scott, he held a cold washcloth on my head and rubbed my neck and shoulders. And at this point, I was just so hot. I was sweating, and I took my hospital gown off and I was just completely naked, which to me felt perfect, and I had not a care in the world about it. And after about probably 30 to 45 minutes of being on the toilet, I told Scott, like, I need an epidural. I can't do this. I need the epidural. And he told me that I was doing so well, getting through each wave, and that we should wait for Julie to get there because she still wasn't there at this point. And I was so annoyed with him, but in the back of my mind, I knew, like, from how I had prepared, that I was in transition, because it was the point where I thought, you know, I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't do this. And that was one of the things I learned while preparing for an unmedicated birth, is that when you feel like you just can't do it anymore, it's almost time to meet your baby. And right after that, Morgan came into the bathroom to check on us. She hadn't checked on us in a while. And I told her, I said, Morgan, I need an epidural. And she asked if I was sure. And I told her yes. But I had to have IV fluids prior to getting the epidural. And to remind you, I did not have an IV hooked up. And Morgan said, well, those would take about 20 minutes to get the fluids in. And in my mind, I thought, you know, there's no way I can take this for 20 more minutes. But in hindsight, those 20 minutes gave us the time we needed for Julie to arrive and to get me in a better mindset. At this point, I started shaking, sweating, and then instinctively, I felt like I needed to do like horse lip type breathing, you know, like that sound horses make with their lips, to get through each wave, because I could feel my jaw tensing up. And really, throughout birth, like, relaxing your face and your jaw is one of the most important things to do, because they are directly related to your pelvic muscles. And relaxing those face and jaw muscles will help you keep your pelvic floor relaxed as well. And right around this time is when Julie arrived. And again, I told her I felt like I needed the epidural. And she asked if we could discuss it and maybe try to move to a different position to see if it would help. Talking to her after the birth, she clearly knew I was in transition and that the baby was coming. And it's so funny because obviously I told my birth team, like, I want to go unmedicated, so please, like, encourage me to do that. So it's just funny looking back. Like, I was telling them I need an epidural, but they did their jobs in telling me and helping me get through it. And Julie had suggested, instead of being on the toilet, to move to the shower to try position change to see if that would help give me any relief. And I really did not want to move away from the toilet because I felt comfortable there. But I finally convinced myself to, because, you know, I was just like, I need some relief of some sort. So standing up really made everything much more intense. And in my mind, I thought, well, how could this get any more intense than what it was just feeling like? But I finally got in the shower, and Julie was running water over my back while I held onto the handles that were in the bathtub. But the handles were so low, like near the bottom of the tub, that it was just not comfortable positioning. So Scott decided to get into the shower with me so I could face him and then hang, like, onto his neck, kind of like a slow dancing position. And in side note, it was so funny because we didn't pack his hospital bag. Like, I told him to pack it, and I forgot to pack it, so neither of us packed it. And so he didn't have, like, swim trunks or shorts or anything. So he literally got in the shower in his sweatpants. So his sweatpants were, like, soaked throughout the whole birth. And it was just, like, a funny thing that was happening that I didn't realize was funny at the time. But after we got into this position, within minutes, I was starting to bear down with each wave, like, trying to push. And I wanted to have another check to make sure I was complete before pushing, because I know that if you're not complete, it can cause your cervix to swell, which could cause additional issues with getting baby to engage and fully dilating. So I did have a small anterior cervical lip. So Julie just had suggested to move to the bed to get on hands and knees so that maybe a position change could help my cervix dilate fully and give us some more time to allow my body to do what it needed to do. And again, changing positions and getting out of the shower sounded awful, but we finally made our way to the bed. For me personally, mentally, I knew that pushing was going to be the hardest part for me. Not because of, like, the physical act of pushing, but because with my first, I had pushed for 4 hours with my son before I had a C-section. And so I just knew that I had to get through the pushing and then baby would be here. Even if I had to push for 4+ hours again, I was so determined just to get through the pushing stage. When I got on the bed, I was on hands and knees, leaning over the back of the bed, while Scott and Julie took turns rubbing my back, giving me drinks of water and apple juice, and then like wiping me down with cold washcloths. Again, I was still like sweating and butt naked at this point, and I just had no care in the world but just to rest between each wave. And I did end up listening to my HypnoBabies track for pushing at this time, which really helped me just focus on the pushing. But with each wave, my body started pushing involuntarily. Like, I didn't even really have to push at this point. I pushed on hands and knees for several waves. And then, like I said, it really felt great to be able to lay on the back of the bed between each wave so I could just rest, because everything was happening so quickly and so intensely that I just felt like I had no break. I was exhausted. After just about 10 minutes of pushing on hands and knees, Julie has suggested moving to the squat bar because, like the first time around, after each pushing session, baby would go back up into my pelvis and not progress forward. And I was just so physically tired that pushing in a squat sounded even more exhausting. And I just did not think I could hold my body up. Like, there was no way. But after moving into a squat and using the bar, Julie and Scott and my nurse Morgan were there to help support my body and my weight. And within 5 minutes and a few waves and a few pushes, baby was out. She was born at 1:14 p.m., just under 5 hours from the start of my waves. So basically, like, from the first contraction I felt, just under 5 hours, she was born. And I held absolutely nothing back with these pushes, and I pushed with everything I have. And this was even with Julie trying to help me slow down and control the pushes, because while I didn't want to do controlled pushing, which is like the counting to 10, holding your breath, when you're pushing, you still need to like control your pushes, as in like take them slowly and don't just like push with all your might and push baby out quickly, because it can increase your risk of tearing. But I did not. I was just so determined to get through that pushing stage that I just wanted to push her out. And she came out so fast. She came out so fast that she didn't have any head molding. Like most babies, when they come out, they have that weird like head molding from going through the birth canal. But her head was completely round because she came out so fast. So this was a total of 15 minutes of pushing compared to 4 hours with my first before the C-section. So that was crazy short. And I had reached down, and Morgan and our doctor were trying to help me get her to my stomach. But again, I was right on the squat bar. And it was so funny because prior to that, like when I was pregnant, Julie had mentioned that if I were to use the squat bar, that I would have to bring baby under the bar because of the umbilical cord. But I was just so happy to have her here that I was trying to bring her over the bar. And so if you could even picture this, it's like me in a squat, hanging over a squat bar, trying to pull my baby to my chest, like over the bar, and the umbilical cord is like getting tangled on the bar. So they eventually had to help me like get her under the bar and to my chest. And then I also completely forgot to check to see if she was a boy or a girl, because we didn't know again. And Scott had told me to check, and I saw that she was a girl. But then at the same time, I like did a double take. I'm like, wait, let me really just make sure she's a girl, because everything just happened so quickly. And after about several minutes, the placenta came out, and I got to see the marginal cord insertion, which was really cool. We got pictures of that. And then there were also pieces of the placenta that were retained. So like they stayed in my uterus and did not come out. I don't know if this had anything to do with the bleeding that started my labor or just how quickly everything went with my birth, but I did have a hemorrhage because of the retained placenta. But eventually they thought they had it all removed. Fast forward, it turns out that some was still left. In about 6 weeks postpartum, I had to get a DNC to remove the retained placenta pieces because I was having a lot of abdominal pain and some excessive bleeding, but that got taken care of. At this point, I started feeling really cold and having that like normal hormonal shaking that you get with labor. But Because of the hemorrhage, my blood pressure dropped quite a bit, similar to my first birth, but thankfully there were no major complications. I also only had a small second degree tear, which to me was surprising because of how quickly I pushed her out. I would have expected that I would have tore worse, but I only had a small second degree tear that I didn't even feel, and I had no issues. We let the cord stay attached as long as possible until it stopped pulsing, and Marley stayed on my chest and nursed the whole time, and she was not taken from me for any of the exams until I gave permission for them to do so. So it was well over an hour, I believe. At least I think. Again, I didn't keep track of time. But we did FaceTime Hudson, my son, so he could see his sister, and he soaked in every second. It was great. Even though he probably really didn't understand, it was still an amazing experience for us, and we got pictures of that too. This time around, we opted to leave the hospital as soon as possible so we could get home to see Hudson. And I was so happy to leave the next day and to sleep in my own bed. I was like, we are getting out of here at the 24-hour mark as soon as we can, which was such a great decision. I'm glad we did. And I want to say that absolutely all of my birth preferences were respected. And I had the most amazing support team, which I know is not the case for many women in general, but also going for a VBAC. I know that there can be a lot, can be an uphill battle and a lot of advocating or arguing or standing up for yourself. And that's unfortunate, but my birth preferences were respected and my support team was absolutely amazing. Even though I ended up with an OBGYN I had never met before, which is usually the case, like you just get whoever's on call. But this OBGYN was so amazing. She had no pushback, no stipulations, no concerns at all about me having a VBAC or pushing in whatever position I wanted to push in. She was wonderful. But my birth was really everything I could have imagined it to be, but nothing I expected all at the same time because it was so fast and so intense, but it also felt like time stood still. It was emotional, it was raw and beautiful, and the second time around, we also had our doula, Julie, take pictures. We did not really have pictures during the birth at all the first time around, except those common like C-section operating room pictures that you see. We got pictures throughout the whole labor and birth, which was wonderful. I'm so glad I have those memories. If we do have a third, I will definitely be hiring a professional birth photographer to get even better photos because it's just so worth it to have those photos. The second birth was obviously wildly different from my first. Both are so special and beautiful in their own ways. Even though I had that birth trauma with my first birth, this was a very redemptive VBAC and birth experience for me. It was everything I could have hoped for. And I have so much more to go into as far as unmedicated birth and my postpartum experience this time around goes, but I will save those for future episodes in hopes to not make this episode too long. I really hope that my VBAC story is able to inspire you and to help you realize that VBAC and unmedicated birth are options for you. They are possible even in the hospital setting. It takes some logistical planning and physical and mental prep, but it is possible. If you have any questions all about my VBAC birth story or want to share maybe your VBAC birth story, or how you can have a VBAC as well, then please DM me on Instagram, reach out to me on Facebook, email me, whatever you want to do, because I would love to chat about it. Thank you all so much for listening today. Again, if you are enjoying the show so far, I would love it if you could leave a rating or review wherever you're listening to this podcast. If you would like to receive a free little gift, once you review, take a screenshot and then go to ebbandflowbirthco.com/podreview. Fill out the form and upload your screenshot, and I will send you a free gift right to your email inbox. I hope you all enjoyed getting in the flow with me today, and I'll see you all next week. You just finished another episode of the Ebb and Flow Birth Show. For more, head over to ebbandflowbirthco.com or on Instagram at ebbandflowbirthco. As a reminder, this podcast is provided to you for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not a substitute for medical advice. Until next time, bye, friends.